keep going, keep using the skills, you know, keep laughing. I laugh at myself. I do so many silly things. But I always say, if you can laugh at yourself, people will laugh with you and not at you.
Hello, and welcome to the Dementia Together podcast. My name is Jessica Hubbard, and in this episode, we're speaking to Teresa Davies, who is 70 and lives in Flintshire in North East Wales. Just over a decade ago, Teresa was diagnosed with young onset Alzheimer's. This came as a shock and left the usually positive Teresa in a dark place. She says she didn't know how to cope after her diagnosis and wasn't given the right support. But a chance meeting turned things around and helped Teresa to find a new purpose. She now lives as well as she can with dementia and supports others affected by the condition. Let's hear more from Teresa.
Hi.
Hi there, Teresa. How are you doing?
I'm fine, thank you. Are you?
Good to hear it. I'm very well, thank you. It might have just stopped raining outside. It's been raining for days.
It's the same here. Oh, I'll go for a walk after. But it's just started to pour down again.
Let's fingers crossed it stops by the end then. Yeah. And whereabouts are you based again?
I'm based in Flintshire in Bulow, but I'm actually dog sitting for my friend at the minute, and so I'm in Glasbury, which is mid Wales, and it's lovely countryside, but I just can't get out
because of the rain.
Yeah.
Today we're going to be talking a bit about your life and your life with dementia as well. You live in, is it Deeside in Flintshire? That's right.
Well, Flintshire, yeah.
Have you lived there long?
I've lived in Bulow for 53 years.
Gosh, yeah.
But I was born and lived in Mould, which is 4 miles away, but yeah. That in Flintshire. So I've always lived in Flintshire, yeah.
It's a lifetime, really, in one area, yeah.
Yeah, and I never sort of went far from that area until I got dementia. And now I go everywhere.
Yeah, it's interesting, that, yeah.
Yeah, it's sort of opened up a whole new world for me. A different world, yes, but it seems funny, but in one way better.
That can only be a good thing, really, can't it?
Yeah, it is a good thing. Yeah.
And can you tell me more about who you live with? Am I right in thinking you live alone, but you live with your dog?
Yes, I live alone. I've got a little chihuahua called Fudge.
I'm going to take you back a bit, if that's okay. Can you tell me a bit about your upbringing and any memories you might have from growing up or school?
Yeah, I was born and brought up in Mould. My dad was from Dublin. My mum is Welsh, was Welsh. Yeah, I went to a Catholic school in Mould, primary school, and then to high school was a Catholic school. Yeah, I had a happy childhood. We didn't have much money, but we had what we needed. Yeah, happy childhood. There was just me and my brother, who's a year older than I am. I went to work in a cake shop.
Oh, right. Yeah, but kind of straight after school.
Yes, at 15. Yeah. I didn't have any qualifications or any, you know, I'm not academic at all.
So what about life after the cake shop? Did you have a family or did you go into a different career?
Yeah, got married, had a family, didn't work then. In them days, the mum stayed at home and ran the house and the children. And then when the children started school, I had two, a boy and a girl. I went to work at a plant nursery and I became a landscape gardener.
Oh, right.
For the next 23 years.
Yeah, wow.
and loved it. I love being outside.
When she was 45, Teresa's life was turned upside down by an accident. She tells me about what happened and the long recovery that followed.
And that came to a stop when I was 45 and I got hit by a car.
Oh, goodness. Is it quite a bad accident then?
The car was going 70, 80 mile an hour. She lost control and hit me, mounted the pavement, and my neck was broke in four places, and my leg was smashed to pieces. They got all my family in, my mum and dad. They said I probably wouldn't survive the night because my spinal cord was swelling. Obviously, I did because I'm here. But it took me 3 years to learn how to walk again. And
must have so just turned your life upside down, really.
Yes, it did, because I couldn't work again. I went to ask for a job in Asda, but they wouldn't employ me. They said, although my neck's okay, they said for insurance and health and safety reasons, I couldn't be employed. You know, I was only 45 and I had to pay rent. I was renting then, living alone. Yeah, so it was a worrying time.
Can imagine. What about life after that? Were you able to continue with any hobbies? What kind of happened in that period?
I still pottered about, you know. I'm not the type just to sit and give up. I had a garden and I would just potter around there, not doing heavy work, and reading. I like reading and knitting. It carried on like that.
Life went on for Teresa, but when she was in her late 50s, her daughter noticed changes in her personality. Then, after injuring herself at home, Teresa decided to visit her GP.
And then one day I was making myself a coffee. So I put the electric kettle on and it switched off, and I then put my hand in the kettle to check if the water was hot. Well, obviously it was. It just boiled. Couldn't understand why I'd done that. You know, my daughter, because we all live local, she called that day and I told her what I'd done. And she said, oh,
actually, Mum, I've been a bit worried about you lately.
So I says, what do you mean? Because I was going through the menopause as well. And the doctor said I had depression and put me on antidepressants. But I've never been a depressive person. As I say, I'm very positive. I got through my accidents. I got through my partnership, which wasn't happy either. But she said she'd noticed I was getting more anxious and mood changes. So after doing that with the kettle, she said, shall we go and see the GP? Like, I was 59 now. I'm having trouble with my words now. They do come to me, but repeat name and address and draw a clock face and all these.
Ah, yes, yeah.
I obviously failed that because he then referred me to the memory clinic. They did more in-depth tests and blood tests and then sent me for a scan, a brain scan. And then me and my daughter were called in a few weeks or months, I can't remember, later to memory clinic to get the results. And it was a real shock because all this time they were doing tests, nobody had mentioned dementia. And I know they couldn't say until they'd done the tests, but I didn't know anybody with dementia. I didn't think anybody in their 50s got dementia. So you get it. Yeah. you don't know. So I think it would have helped if they'd said, we're doing this to maybe rule out it could be dementia, just so I'd had that word in my head, I think, because when we went into the office and she said, we've got the results here and it concludes what we suspected, that you have Alzheimer's. Well, could have, you know, I just didn't know what to think. I don't know what I thought I had, but so it was like hitting the brick wall.
Teresa says her mental health was in a bad place following her diagnosis. A lack of tailored support and information made her feel worse.
They gave me a pack of leaflets, which I called the Welcome Pack to Alzheimer's. They said I'd get a visit sometime in the future, you know, near future, from the Alzheimer's Society. And they said, we suggest you get your power of attorney set up and make a will. And your life expectancy, because you're only in your 50s, your life expectancy is 5 to 8 years, which I don't think you need to hear that. I know it's important to get your power of attorney, your will in place, you know, but not to be told that when you've got, you're trying to come to terms with. Anyway, we went home. My daughter burst into tears. So being the mother, I'm looking after, you know, I'll be all right, it's all right. But when she went home, I didn't know how to cope with it.
You may remember that Teresa was involved in a car accident when she was 45. She compares her experience of recovery and the support she received then to her experience following her dementia diagnosis.
You know, from being so positive, like my marriage, I knew that wasn't going to be my life, that the time would come when I would get out of it. And my accident, I fought so hard to walk again, because I went walking every day in this plaster when I come out of hospital, covered in plaster on 2 crutches. And I'd walk up and down the road every day. And they said that I recovered because I didn't give up. But when they told me this, I just thought, well, what's the point? You know, they've given me a terminal diagnosis and they've said, I just went into a real bad place because I thought, what's the point in fighting it? You know, I could have died in that accident. And then they didn't think I'd ever walk again. But I kept positive and I knew it wasn't the end. But then getting that diagnosis, and then people were coming and giving me a day clock and putting in care links and whiteboards. And I wasn't at that stage, but it just made me feel more that my life wasn't my own anymore.
Teresa was encouraged to go to groups for people with dementia and memory cafes. She says she found this very difficult to begin with, but decided to keep going. She still attends one group almost 10 years later.
Anyway, I went along because my daughter said social worker had recommended it. There was people there in later stages to me. Some were older, some were even younger than me. I was sitting there and it was like looking at my future. And I was thinking, I don't think I need to be here. You know, I don't think I'm in the right place. I'm not at that stage yet to be here because I live alone. Anyway, my daughter said, oh, well, the social worker said, no, you don't need to be there. But as you progress, you'll get to know the carers and the building. And so when you do have to go there, you won't be distressed. And vice versa, they'll know you. And so if they notice any changes, they will know. And I kept going. But since I've been going about 10 years now. I've seen they're all new people now because the others have either gone into homes or have died, which at first I found that very hard because I built these friendships up, especially with one lady I did. And as she progressed, she was the same age as me. I was sort of looking after her. There was only me she would let touch her. And then she collapsed there and was taken to hospital and then died of COVID. And it upsets me that I form these friendships and then the person disappears. But I've grown. Now it's like a day off to me because as I've got busy, Friday is my day just to, I've made friends, the carers, I think the world of. We had good laughs with the other members there. You know, when they diagnose you, they give you all the end of stage scenarios sort of thing. But we've still got a life.
Yeah.
Before we get to that stage. So, you know, they just write you off and you become invisible. But it's actually, as I say, through meeting other people, and I think this is why it's so important to meeting other people who are living as well as you can, because you don't live well. Who does live well? But we live as well as we can and as well as we're allowed to.
So to recap, Teresa Davies is 70 and lives with her dog Fudge in Flintshire, Wales. She has always been a positive and independent person and has overcome several challenges in her life, including a serious car accident when she was 45. When in her late 50s, Teresa's daughter noticed her becoming more anxious. She was going through menopause at the time, so didn't suspect anything else could be wrong. Following an incident where she badly burnt herself at home, Teresa's daughter suggested they go to the GP. After memory tests and a brain scan, Teresa was given a diagnosis of young onset Alzheimer's, the term for an Alzheimer's diagnosis received before the age of 65. This came as a shock, and Teresa struggled to cope following the diagnosis. She felt that the support she was offered wasn't tailored for her or for people with young onset dementia. Next, we hear how Teresa lives as well and as independently as she can, and how a chance meeting turned things around after her diagnosis and gave her a new purpose. Teresa says she has always been independent and wants to remain as independent as she can for as long as possible.
I've lived alone for a long time, but for the last 20 odd years I've lived alone. But I've always, even though I was married and then living with someone, I was very independent anyway. Yeah, I like being living alone. You know, I don't get lonely. And I actually prefer, especially with dementia now, I prefer to live alone because everything is where I put it. There's no coming and moving stuff. And also nobody doing things for me. So I've got to do it, otherwise, you know, I've got to carry on doing these things as much as I can, which helps me, I think. I find sometimes carers, family members, only because they care, actually disable people by speaking for them and doing everything for them.
How does dementia affect you daily, and do you find you need support with things? And we had talked about just how independent you are as well. I wonder if you had an answer to that. Or
yes, it does affect me day to day, because I live alone and I've lost my appetite now. I never feel hungry.
I see, yeah.
Or drink, you know, to drink. And so my daughter's set, I've gone Alexa. So my daughter's sort of programmed into her to set reminders to eat. And if I'm out, it comes through on my phone. And I've got, you know, a whiteboard and things like that that help me. But I could do with the PA, I think, to I get very, I've started to get very mixed up with my emails. That could be just because I'm getting so busy, or it could be dementia, I don't know. But I tend to double book myself a place, you know. I forget to put down in my diary straight away, or I forget to look. It's okay, I've got a calendar as well. And I do put things down, but then it's forgetting to look.
Do you have any tips or advice for people living with dementia who want to be as independent for as long as possible and to live as well as they can as well?
Keep going, keep using the skills, you know, keep laughing. I laugh at myself. I do so many silly things. But I always say, if you can laugh at yourself, people will laugh with you and not at you. Just get things in order. I mean, I was told to do it right when I was diagnosed, but that was too soon. But say after a few months, or when you're ready, get your power of attorney, get your will made. I've done my future care plan. Get them done, get them out the way, and then you can just live for the day.
A chance meeting with another person living with young onset dementia turned things around for Teresa.
I'm involved with so many things now. But it all started after I was diagnosed for about 12 months, could be a bit less, but I wasn't given any hope. And I was really depressed. And they don't tell you what symptoms or challenges that you may encounter. So you think it's just your memory. Anyway, my friend had to go through her work to a dementia friends session. And she said to me, why don't you come? Because, you know, we both might learn something. So I went along. And it was a gentleman and his wife who were given the dementia friends session. And at the end, he said he was Chris Roberts, and he said he was 52 and he had dementia. Well, he's the first person I'd come across that had dementia that was up there speaking, you know, and he told a few jokes and was laughing, and I was just amazed. I was with Chris and Jane yesterday. They still remember me putting my hand up, and I said, oh, I've been diagnosed this year. And Chris says, well, wait behind and we'll have a chat. And he said, you need to get out there, find out what's going on, you know, in your community, and get involved. I said I'd never be able to stand up there and speak to people. Anyway, he said, go to the Alzheimer's Society and you can go on the training, a one-day training course, and you can do this. Anyway, I come home and I thought, no, I'd never be able to do it. But I went, and then I practiced family and friends. So I got a bit better. And then Chris introduced me to the Deep Network. which is Dementia Engagement and Empowerment Project. And I got a phone call from Rachel Niblock, their coordinator, who said she was going to a conference in Cardiff and would I like to come along? Oh gosh, I was so nervous. Through meeting them, because through DEEP I met so many other people living as well as they can with dementia, they built my confidence up.
Some people know Teresa as Dory, and she tells me how she came by this unusual nickname.
Do you prefer to be called, is it Dory? Dory?
Dory.
Dory. And yeah. Where does this name come from?
Have you seen the film Finding Dory?
Absolutely, yes.
It's the sequel to Finding Nemo.
Yeah, that's right.
When my granddaughter was 8, I took her to watch the film. And she said, oh, Nanny, you're just like Dory. So she called me Nanny Dory. But then I got involved with the DEEP network. I wasn't a confident person then. I'd never done public speaking. But getting involved with them, they built my confidence up. And we went along to Brighton to the UK Dementia Congress. And I spoke on the stage there in front of about 800 professionals. And I came in the top 5 for the Dementia Awards. So my friend said, you should do something so you never forget this day, because I'm so proud of you.
Yeah.
Anyway, I went into a tattoo parlor and got a tattoo of Dory on my ankle. Since then, I've become Dory. I mean, my family and friends at home call me Teresa or T, but sort of when I'm out in the dementia world, say I'm Dory. And I do like Dory. I'm very attached to her, which is a good job, being as she's on my leg.
Teresa has since gone on to speak at conferences, raise awareness of dementia, and support others with the condition. She wants everyone with dementia to have the support they need to live as well as they can.
I met Chris by chance, and I felt, what if I'd never gone to that dementia session with him doing it? Where would I be now? But that was only by chance, and I thought, it shouldn't be by chance. It shouldn't be left to chance. It should be a choice. And so I thought, what about having a contact number to speak to? Because not everybody wants to go to a group at the beginning. So I spoke to DEEP about if we could get some funding, and I called it a friendly face. And it was a fridge magnet, because when you get diagnosed, you're given a bag of pamphlets and they're all medical terms. And so much of it, you just, you know, put it in a drawer. And so I thought a fridge magnet with the phone number on and saying, you know, have you received a diagnosis? Would you like to speak to somebody who's also had the diagnosis? Because I thought, a magnet, you can put it on the fridge and you may not want to phone it, you know, for a while, but you go into the fridge. One day you might think, oh, I'll give that number a ring. And I did have a few calls. A lady phoned me. Well, it was the lady's daughter phoned. And she said her mum won't go to a group, but she said, would I be willing to meet with them in a cafe? So I did. I went along and the lady came along with the mum. And we had like an afternoon tea And then I set up some groups. I've now got 3 groups for people with dementia and their family members who care for them, for people to come along. And she came along to that group in the end. It's not a service. We're called like-minded, got a poster, and it says, 4 people with dementia run by people with dementia. And we're not told, nobody tells anybody what to do. I said, do you want to do activities? Is there anything you'd like to do? And they all say no, they just love coming, having teas and coffees, cake and biscuits, sharing information. I take all my leaflets I've got.
Teresa says supporting others living with dementia has given her a new purpose.
My son will say, well, Mum, why are you doing all this, you know? I says, well, it helps me because it keeps me active and I've got a purpose again. I says, because I know through letters and what people say to me that I help them. So it's a two-way thing. I says, and if I can help one person, like Chris helped me, then it's worth it, isn't it?
Do you ever consider just stopping, just stepping back from it? But from what you said...
No, not yet.
It's not so easy, is it?
Not while I can. I have learned to say no to some things. If I think I'm just going to be a tick box exercise.
Teresa encourages people affected by dementia to talk about it and break the stigma. This includes at the group she attends and helps to run.
It's like cancer, isn't it? Years ago, they never would say cancer. It was the C word. We're trying to break the stigma, get people to talk about it. That's not the end, you know, to go and see their GP earlier, because the earlier you get diagnosed, the sooner you can get on medication and get the help. But if you don't mention it, that stigma's still there, this scary thing.
Thank you for listening to the Dementia Together podcast. Next steps. Visit alzheimers.org.uk/publications for our range of publications and fact sheets designed to support and inform anyone affected by dementia. For personalised information and advice, call our dementia support line on 0333 150 3456 or for Welsh speakers, call 033 00 947 400. Don't forget to like, share and subscribe for more Alzheimer's Society podcasts. This podcast was written and recorded by Jessica Hubbard and edited by John Wood.